Vast majority of people speak English, at least they, you know, when I ask, so you just speak simply.
But Tomek will help you with some...
Maybe with questions or...
No, well, it starts installing an office and... So let me just give a short introduction. I'm Gerda Clark, you already saw me yesterday. I'm from Wikimedia Netherlands. And in the Netherlands, we have the lucky circumstances that a lot of cultural institutions want to cooperate with us. So we've had some interesting... Yes, that's wonderful. So we are also working, like Wikimedia Polska, we're working on a world with free knowledge for every human being. A world with... Yes?
Okay. Better.
Yes. So we're working on a world with free knowledge for everybody. But then, well, we're doing it in Dutch and not in Polish. So that might, because, well, that's our part. So our basic standing point is that Wikimedia has no monopoly on its own mission. That means that we're not the only one trying to get knowledge to everybody. There are lots of institutions around the world, in Polska, in the Netherlands, which also try to achieve the same, which try to preserve knowledge, which try to bring knowledge to the people. And those are the like-minded organizations, basically. So it's very sensible to try to cooperate with them and try to create some kind of synergy, try to create... To see where we can help each other instead of trying to compete with each other. Because competition in this specific case is not really helpful. We're trying to give people knowledge, and 1 + 1 is not always 2, but sometimes 3. And that's very helpful. But something to mind there is that there is sometimes a big cultural gap. We have Wikipedians, and Wikipedians are very much used to, oh yeah, let's just do it. Don't complain and just add it to the damn page and don't worry about it. But these cultural institutions are sometimes a little bit more old-fashioned, or they have different habits, or they have different... There can be many reasons why there is some kind of a cultural gap between Wikimedia, how we operate, and how they operate, because they have paid staff and we have volunteers. And that's something to keep always in mind. So in the Netherlands in 2007-2008, we started with the working group Free Media. And we had a very ambitious goal. We wanted to have one collection of media files be freed. Well, I think we accomplished that goal. In the year after it, we wrote a letter to the government. It was, again, very ambitious. We thought, well, it's not going to make a chance anyway, but why let's not try? There was a new government in place, Balkenende IV, and we actually achieved that the government released all the photos of the cabinet ministers under the GFDL. Well, why the GFDL? Because that's the most horrible photo license you can imagine. Well, that's exactly the reason they chose the GFDL, because it's so horrible. Because if someone would like to use these photos in print, they would have to print the whole license with it. So it's practically unusable for printed media. But that was their intention. And that's again something about a cultural map, that's a cultural gap. They don't care specifically about freedom, but they do care whether someone will not draw a moustache. And it's for us it's totally ridiculous, because there are other laws protecting that. But that is, for example, why they will never release an image of the Queen. Because people could perhaps draw a moustache on her face. Like they're not doing that anyway. So in 2009, we took it to the next level. In cooperation with the Kennison Foundation, Knowledge Land Foundation, a foundation who tries to educate the Netherlands, also in media literacy, but also more in general, we organized Wikilove Art. It was a project with 14 museums, and people could go to a museum and make photos of a selected set of paintings, objects, etc. The museums did all the work in selecting them, like which are free of rights, which are not free of rights, which can you photograph or not. And it was basically organized because of a lot of innovative individuals. So that is also when we met with the Tolkien Museum. The Tolkien Museum is a one of these 40 museums which were participating. And because we had the contacts in Wiki Loves Art, they wanted to get better in touch with us because they got to know us. They sniffed a bit and they said, okay, you're trustworthy, you're professional enough, we can work with you. So the only reason why they cooperated with us is because there were a few people in that organization that were really, really enthusiastic about it. And usually we found these people in the ICT departments, very funnily enough. And it's basically, it is all about images, the 12 Museum Cooperation. First we had a cooperation around the Art of Survival exhibition. It was about Maroon culture in Suriname. And after that we had a cooperation around Indonesian images, which is also a former Dutch colony. And I think it's a great example where a lot of images ended up on Wikimedia Commons. And also the museum is very happy about the cooperation. They're very happy that they get so much attention, that the images are actually being used in a context. That the images are not just there in their archives, sitting there doing nothing. No, this... So, I told you yesterday already about Wiki Loves Monuments. And the big cooperation behind that is with the Agencies for Cultural Erfgoed, the National Institute for Cultural Heritage. And what they did, they didn't release photos, like most of the cultural corporations you will encounter, but they released a database of monuments. It's very boring data, and most of the people cannot imagine what you could do with it. But we have proven that that kind of donations and that kind of cooperations can be very helpful. But what is more interesting here is also that it's very volunteer-driven. Most of the successful cooperations where data or media have to be used in Wikipedia needs to be driven by volunteers, because otherwise it won't happen. If there are no volunteers enthusiastic about the project, if there are no volunteers interested in integrating the content into Wikipedia, it will not happen. So what did the Rijksdienst get back from it? Because that's an important question you always have to ask yourself. It got more data. You see these lists? Basically, that's what we made out of this database. There is a description, there is a category of what kind of monument it is, and there is some more data. And a lot of volunteers checked the information. When they started to make photos, they discovered that the address was wrong. So they corrected it. Or they found out that that actually the building burned down, or that the interior is totally removed and replaced by something else, in some churches, for example. And that information is very important for the Rijksdienst. So these corrections, we collect them, and we give them back to the Rijksdienst. We don't force them to use it, but we offer it to them, and then they can decide whether these specific corrections are trustworthy enough for them to implement. They can see if they want to check it, if they want to do a second control, and they can continue on that as well. So, besides making people enthusiastic about their topic, it's also a lot of extra data and a lot of extra helpful information. Well, one of the cooperations I am most thrilled about is the cooperation with the National Archive of the Netherlands. Even though there are only 1,000 images, they are from a very important period of time and very important set of topics. We have, of course, as most of you probably will know, we have, if images are older than 100 years, most of the times you can use them because they're in public domain. If you had a topic from the last 10 years, it's very likely that someone will have a photo with their digital camera, because everybody has a camera nowadays, and it's very likely that you will find a free photo about it, or at least you can make one. But there is that big cult, that big black gap between, say, the 1920s, 1930s, and the 1990s, where we have no free photo material. And this is where this collection comes in. The National Archive published, they bought at some point a press agency. A press agency that was going bankrupt, they bought their collection. So they had a lot of photos from politicians. And these are some examples. And we could use these photos in the articles about these politicians. So for example, when a Dutch government is formed, you get, they always stand on the stairs before the palace of the queen and let them make a photo, like, haha, look, we are the government. Nowadays even the queen is in between them, but you see there's just a set of men there, no women actually, and they're just standing there being boring. Not really an interesting photo, but it's a very important photo for the article about that specific government. This is a government from the 1950s. Then this photo, it's not so much a portrait photo, but it's very characteristic for the negotiations about that government. This is a candidate minister during the negotiations about the government talking with his fraction in the room in that building. So he's just having a little chat, so he's very relaxed. He's not so formal, and that was very characteristic for 1994, or 19. Maybe it's earlier. This is Prime Minister Kok. No, it's not a reference to. It's just, it's a Prime Minister from 1994 to 2002. And it's the most used photo from this collection. Because, how weird it may sound, we did not have a proper photo of this man on any Wikipedia. And now it's being used in all language versions. And it's actually quite a popular photo. It shows him like he is, very serious, old. It's a very characteristic photo that helps. This kind of photos were used in newspapers. But this one is one of the funniest photos. This is Queen Juliana. She was queen from 1940-something to 1980. And she's here walking her dog. And that's just her. I mean, she's known for peeling the sprouts herself, or driving a bicycle through normal cities, or and this is very a typical photo. So she's wearing a very expensive robe, a very expensive a jacket, but she's still just walking the dog herself because she likes to do that. So it's also this photo is taken during some kind of crisis. So then you see immediately, like, she doesn't care about the crisis, she just does her thing, and doesn't care much about politics. And our latest collaboration, which the photos are not yet in common, so I didn't put them in yet, is with the Amsterdam Museum. The Amsterdam Museum was also thrilled about our corporations. They saw Wikiloc's monuments, and they thought, well, this is great, because they are doing really innovative stuff, and they're really reaching out to the public. And they were trying to find a way to renew themselves, because I'm not sure how it's in Poland, but in the Netherlands, museums are getting less and less money from the government. The government is trying to take away money because they have to cut back, but also because of a general principle. They want to spend less money on culture. And that means that if a museum wants to survive, they will have to be innovative. They will have to find ways to stand out of the crowd and to draw more people. So they wanted to cooperate with Wikipedia because that draws in more people, because people see the photo and they think, hey, that's an interesting painting. I want to see it in real. So they gave 50,000 images to Wikipedia, and they're still to be uploaded. We're still working on that, but they're coming. And I think that's also a clear example. So what are the lessons that I drew from these cooperations? I think it's very important to realize that a cooperation with a museum, with an institute, is usually not a cooperation with the institute. Most of the times it's a cooperation with some individuals in that institute. So you need to build personal relationships, but also a more formal relationship with the museum so they can defend it. So don't start immediately and try to get a big image donation. Always start small. Try a little test project. Try to, even if it may sound ridiculous, you have 10 photos. I mean, yeah, well, we have millions of them on Commons. To them, it might be a testing ground to see if you're trustworthy, if you're actually crediting them well enough, if you're actually a good partner, basically. And that also brings me to the third point, give and give. It's not just we take a collection. It's not, you give us 50,000 photos, thank you, we send a press release, that's it. No, you will have to find a way to actually make it beneficial in both ways. And it will be beneficial for us anyway, so we don't have to worry about that. But we do have to worry about making it helpful for them, because even though if they give the donation, they cannot take it back anymore, they can make better advertisement with other museums. We saw that happen in the UK at some point with the National Portrait Gallery. They put images on the internet, and a Wikipedian stole them, at least according to them. The Wikipedia took them because they were public domain. He was probably very much in his right to do so, but the question is that the most diplomatic way? In a relationship with the chapter, with a museum, with an archive, with anything, it's the same thing. You don't have to think about what are your rights, but how can you make sure that it's a long-lasting relationship and that they like to tell about it to their partners, to their friends, to the other museums, because that's the way to make a skill. And the final point, volunteers are very important. We know that, but also in this project, it's important that volunteers support the cooperation. If volunteers don't like these paintings, they will not be used. And I think that's a nice closing remark for this. Volunteers are the basis. Thank you.
Dyskusja?
Może króciutko. Poprosiłem Ludowika, żeby ten wykład dał ze względu na to, że Stowarzyszenie Wikimedia Polska jest naprawdę kiepskie w dziedzinie tej współpracy z muzeami. To znaczy oprócz jednego przypadku dawno temu z Muzeum Zamku Sułkowskich w zasadzie nie było takiej stałej współpracy z żadnym muzeum. Są różne tego przyczyny, nie tylko po naszej stronie, ale na przykład była próba na przykład nawiązania współpracy z Narodowym Archiwum Cyfrowym, ale tam jest taki problem z tym Narodowym Archiwum Cyfrowym, że oni sami mają bałagan co do praw autorskich do zdjęć, które prezentują na swojej stronie ze swoim logo. I mało tego, nie wiem dlaczego, ale w polskich w tych środowiskach archiwistów fotograficznych przynajmniej przyjęło się, że koniecznie muszą ładować wielkie logo, które zasłania pół zdjęcia po to, żeby udowodnić, że to jest ich, żeby nikt tego nie ukradł. Nawet jak to jest zdjęcie ewidentnie już w domenie publicznej, do których wszelkie prawa autorskie wygasły. Więc i była tam próba nawiązania współpracy i się właśnie skończyło na tym, że po pierwsze się okazało, że oni mają problem z dokumentacją praw autorskich do tych zdjęć. Nie wiadomo właściwie do kogo te zdjęcia należą. No i po drugie, że tam była długa dyskusja, co zrobić z tymi logami i uparli się, że te loga koniecznie muszą zostać i że a w Wikimedia Commons jest zasada, że my te loga usuwamy, a najlepiej chcielibyśmy po prostu skany bez tych log, bo to niszczy zdjęcie archiwalne. I oprócz tego nie było żadnej współpracy i też nie mamy właściwie do tej pory przynajmniej nikogo w stowarzyszeniu, kto by chciał się podjąć na tej współpracy, właśnie tej ciężkiej pracy z muzeami, jak mówił Ludowik, to chodzi o to, że nie należy, nawet jak się ma inną opinię niż ci pracownicy muzeum, no to oni też są w różnych strukturach i tak dalej i oni muszą mieć z tego jakąś korzyść w tym sensie, że na przykład chociażby szefowi się pochwalą, że coś z takiej współpracy wynikło. I trzeba to rozumieć i spróbować znaleźć jakieś wspólne pole do działania. I tak jak mówię, no w tej chwili to musiałaby być taka osoba, która by była nie agresywna, tylko koncyliacyjna i gotowa dyskutować godzinami z pracownikami muzeum, przekonywać ich do różnych rzeczy i może by się wtedy udało jakąś współpracę rzeczywiście nawiązać. Także myślę, że jest ciekawe i właśnie Wikimedia w Wielka Brytania, Wikimedia Netherlands, Wikimedia Deutschland były całkiem efektywne w tym, z tym, że jedna z przyczyn jest też taka, że po prostu oni mają większy porządek w muzeach i archiwach, jeśli chodzi o prawa autorskie, niż spotyka się to tu w Polsce. I w Polsce właśnie też są takie przypadki, że zaczynamy rozmawiać, no i im się głupio jest przyznać, że mają po prostu bałagan i nie chcą, żeby się to ujawniło. No i w związku z tym ucinają natychmiast tą współpracę po kilku pytaniach odnośnie praw autorskich, tego, co oni prezentują na własnej stronie bądź w inny sposób. No i niestety jest taki problem. Niemniej no warto by, na pewno są muzea i różne miejsca, również archiwa i inne instytucje kultury czy pamięci narodowej, z którymi na pewno warto byłoby nawiązać współpracę, z tym, że no właśnie nie było w stowarzyszeniu nikogo takiego, kto by mógł być takim liderem tej akcji.
Jest tak. Akurat okazja, za chwilę mamy prezentację inną zupełnie, ale właśnie z zaproszonym naszym gościem, panem dyrektorem Józwenką, który jest szefem instytucji jak najbardziej kulturalnej i z dziedzictwa narodowego. Wprawdzie temat tej prezentacji będzie niezupełnie dotyczył tego, o czym była przed chwilą mowa, ale ja mam nadzieję, panie dyrektorze, że dzisiejsze nasze spotkanie będzie pierwszym kroczkiem, który uda się, że tak powiem, wykonać po to, żeby taką bliższą współpracę pomiędzy naszym stowarzyszeniem a Ossolineum nawiązać. Tutaj pierwsze, dosłownie to będą pierwsze kroczki, ale spodziewam się, że coś z tego się urodzi nam.
To znaczy tak, ja chciałam powiedzieć, że no nie jest może tak źle, jak tutaj Polimerek mówił, bo były incydentalne sprawy też z uzyskaniem na przykład zdjęć na wolnej licencji z kaplicy w Zamku Lubelskim, której no sfotografować po prostu nie można, nie da się. Tudzież na przykład w Zachęcie się udało zrobić trochę zdjęć, także to może nie jest tak źle. I jeszcze no tak ze swoich no prywatnych kontaktów z muzealnikami, no wiem, że często bywa tak, że młodzi pracownicy nawet byliby chętni do jakiejś współpracy, natomiast ze strony dyrekcji często jest opór, bo oni mają czasami takie przekonanie, oni nawet niechętnie innym muzeom udostępniają na przykład to, co mają w zbiorach swoich, to znaczy może nie w zbiorach, ale gdzieś tam głęboko schowane. Ponieważ no, jak gdyby no, to jest jakaś tam rzecz, którą oni by chcieli mieć, opracować kiedyś w dalekiej przyszłości, no i żeby nikt nie wiedział najlepiej, że oni to mają, bo jeszcze ktoś by się tam zobaczył że i chciał sam to zrobić. Także tutaj no może ta trochę powoli następująca wymiana pokoleniowa trochę nam sprawę ułatwi. Ale no oczywiście nie jest to reguła. No ja mówię o dwóch jednostkowych przypadkach no, z dwóch muzeów. No to w zasadzie tyle, co chciałam powiedzieć.
To może są jeszcze jakieś pytania bezpośrednio do Ludowika odnośnie tego, o czym on mówił konkretnie.
So it very much depends on the cooperation. Because everything is in the end volunteer driven, It also here, for example, the Tropa Museum Corporation, that involved perhaps 3 or 4 volunteers. The Rijksdienst Corporation with the monument database, of course, because we expanded it into Wiki-Lost Monuments, it had some 10 or 15 volunteers doing all kind of stuff. And there can be different groups of volunteers, it can be the same. But basically, we have 3 or 4 people working constantly on cultural cooperations, going to cultural institutions, telling them what it's all about, trying to explain why it would help them to cooperate with us. Does that answer your question?
Nie widzę.
Dziękuję bardzo. Thank you.